Love is the greatest, most powerful force in the whole universe. When I first heard somebody say that, I thought, how in the world can love be what he says it is? And yet I had a very high regard and a great respect for the person who said it. Can it be stronger than a battleship? Yes. Can it be greater than a fleet of 1,000 B-1 bombers? Yes. Can it be more powerful than a cannon? See, I'm thinking about myself as a young boy. They have other things now that are destroyed. We got nuclear-tipped missiles here. But can love be greater than a nuclear-tipped missile? Yes. Can it do more destruction than a submarine as it lies invisible on the floor of the ocean and then unlooses a missile that's tipped with a nuclear bomb on it? Yes. How can this be? How can this be? Well, it's very simple. Love can destroy a battleship by destroying the need for a battleship. Love can destroy a cannon by destroying the need for a battleship or a cannon. It can destroy that fleet of 1,000 B-1 bombers by destroying the need. And it can destroy a nuclear missile by destroying the need for that nuclear missile. You see, by having love one for another become worldwide, one nation won't have to be afraid of another nation. They won't need a battleship, so that battleship is going to rust. I guess battleships rust if they're not mothballed. The airplanes can be put out in the desert and get rusty and destroyed because there's no need for them. And the same would be true for a nuclear missile. Love is the most powerful force in the universe. In that way. Love can even destroy death. Now that's a real problem, isn't it? How does love destroy death? Well, Carl went into that just a little bit. But it can do it. And God says that he will do it. Because he loves mankind. You know, many people, in their own way, show some appreciation of God's great gift at certain times of the year. Easter just passed. Many people go to church on Easter Sunday. They may even go to church as many times as two or three times a year, to show their gratitude that they feel. They really do not fully know how and why and when that promise of peace on earth will come. They just seem to want to ensure themselves to some extent of the mercy and forgiveness of God and the love of God. And there are some, and we're very thankful for those, there are some Christian people who go to church every Sunday. Every Sunday, faithfully. They pay their dues, and then they go home feeling good that they have done the right thing. And although I say these things with sort of a tongue-in-cheek, I don't condemn them any more than Jesus did when he said in John 12:47, If any man hear my words and believe not, says I judge him not. For I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. We're grateful for the good people that are out there. And there are a lot of good people out there. You know, Paul, on one occasion, preaching in Athens, puts it nicely. He says that, and this is found in Acts, the 17th chapter, verse 30. He says, the times of this ignorance about God's love, God winked at it. A better word might be he overlooked this period of time when mankind was ignorant of God's love. That's just as true today as it was when Paul said it. There are many people who are sincere in trying to live according to what they know about God and his plans, and they feel they are fully in God's favor and are being blessed by him. And they're living good, honest, righteous lives according to the principles laid down by Jesus. And they feel they fully appreciate and know what John 3:16 is all about. John 3:16, most every Christian knows what that says. It says, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Well, I've come to a new and a different conclusion about how God feels about mankind that I never quite had before. It is my firm conviction that of all of God's creative works, except for the Logos, that the creation of man is the one that is the nearest to his heart. After the Logos, his most precious creation, I feel, was man. And when I say man, I mean Adam and Eve. Just as Brother Michael pointed out, the two were one. Not the angels or the cherubim or the seraphim or any of the other glorious beings in the universe, or any other majestic planetary systems and so on. No, I feel certain that the creation of man is next to the Logos, the dearest of all God's creation. John 3:16, when we read it and read it and read it over again, seemed to me to say just that. And in order to emphasize it, I'm going to suggest that we can elaborate it just a little bit. I don't like the idea of adding to the scriptures because we're told not to do that. But some of the versions kind of elaborate on some of the words that are used. And I'd like to suggest a little bit of elaboration or emphasis by adding two words. And that's very much, those two words. And then that John 3:16 would read this way. For God so very much loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Now, why do I feel that way? Well, first of all, God said about his other creation, at least relative to the earth, that they were all good. And then he came to that point in his creative works where he said, let us make man in our image and after our likeness. And then he blessed them. And then he gave dominion to them over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Now, there's no such statement made about any of the other created beings in all of God's universe. After he surveyed all that he had created, and only after he created man and blessed him in this special way, did God say it was very good. Very good. We are in the image and likeness of God himself. Or at least we were when God created Adam and Eve. And when we consider the statement that we're made in the image and in the likeness of God, I suggest we're very far removed now in our fallen state from that image. But even so, if we can be moved with compassion when we see something terrible has happened, or when we see suffering, or those who are in pain and deep distress and sorrow, I wonder if we realize that God has that same quality, only 1,000 times greater in degree. We're in his likeness and in his image. If we can love someone so deeply that we want to be near them every minute, I think we ought to realize and consider how God has this same quality, 1,000 times more so. If we cry with tears because of a great tragedy in our lives, let us remember that so can God do so, only 1,000 times more. If we can be incredibly happy, so can God, only more so. If we can do something smart and accomplish great things, so can God. And I'm going to say God can do it 1,000,000 times greater than we can. And if we can say something that's helpful, be kind and generous and merciful and forgiving, so can God. That's why he loves us so very much. Because we're in his image and in his likeness. And every time he looks at us, even though we're imperfect, he says, that's just like the same way I would react, he said, to an event or of great sorrow or an event of great happiness. Our second point, remember Jesus in Matthew 18, verses 12 and 13, talks about a man who had 100 sheep. One of them went astray. Just one. This man leaves the 99 and seeks the one. Now that one that went astray, I think to me represents Adam when he disobeyed God. And of course we were in Adam, so that represents all of us. After the lost one is found, we read that the man rejoiceth more of that sheep than of all the 99 that did not go astray. Proof positive that this was a very special sheep to this owner. It was very precious to him to leave the 99 and search even into the mountains. You know, if that happened to us, we had 100 sheep and one got lost, I'm afraid we would say, well, we better watch over the 99 so that we don't lose any more. Well, that one that's lost, that's just too bad. But not so in this picture. To me, it emphasizes the great love and the special place of man in God's heart. Now, this doesn't mean that we should think that God just left all the others to fend for themselves. I'm sure he made the proper provisions for all of them and all of his creation for them and their care. It should thrill our hearts, however, to the very deepest recesses that we have to appreciate this fact that God cared enough to send the very best to make his search for that one lost sheep. Point number three, to whom did God go to find those that he wanted to raise up to be members of his own family, to live with him on the highest plane of being in the universe, on the divine plane, the divine nature? He came to mankind, to those that he loved so very much. What an incredibly stupendous thought it is, first of all, to realize how very dear we are to God, and always have been, even though Adam disobeyed God. This greatest being in the universe, loving mankind so much, he cared enough to send the very best, his only son. And then to realize that among those that he cares about so very much, he's going to call some to come up to an even closer relationship to him, to live with him as members of his family. It should boggle the mind and the heart of us all. It should send chills up and down our back and tears of joy to our eyes as we contemplate such a great honor that has come to us. Now we see what John 3:16 really means when we analyze it deeply to see the depth of God's love. And you know, God didn't wait until we cleaned ourselves up either. In Romans 5:8, Paul says, God commendeth his love toward us that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. The first step in the plan was the birth of Jesus as a human being, and his death and his resurrection. That took love. That took a lot of love to send his very best, willing to give up his life so that we might live, so that we might have life. Now, sending Jesus as a Savior wasn't just a Band-Aid treatment, you know. The world is putting Band-Aids on their troubles all over the world. They're not having too much success in treating their wounds. But not God. This is a well-thought-out plan, and as has already been stated, by God's wisdom and by God's justice, he has devised a plan that is a well thought out plan. And it was thought out even before the foundation of the earth. And we have a statement in Ephesians 1:4 that even the plan to select the church was conceived before the foundation of the earth. Weymouth says it was before the creation of the world. And the 20th century says it was before the creation of the whole universe. And that should be a real comfort to us, to know that God can plan that far ahead. Now, I don't know how far ahead that was. It was more than 6,000 years ago, we know that. And it could have been a million years ago, if the intent of that scripture is that it was before the creation of the universe. It could have been. Millions of years ago, God cared enough to make up a plan that would save mankind sometime in the future. You know, sometimes, at least in my case, I feel that, you know, God really doesn't know what's going on here. I really need a little help. And then I'm so ashamed. I go to God and say, God, please forgive me. Because when we think of someone who can plan that far ahead, whether it's a million years or whether it's 6,000 or 7,000 years before, when we think of someone who can plan that far, he certainly must be able to plan for me for the next day or the next day after that. What a grand lesson for us to trust God implicitly in his ability to watch over our affairs. And I trust that we will remember it and cherish that thought throughout the rest of our course this side the veil. Someone that I, again, regarded very highly, who's gone from our fellowship now, once suggested that Jesus, at the time he offered himself to go and be a sacrifice to redeem mankind, was willing to go out of existence in order to do this great work of redeeming mankind. We really don't know whether that's so or not, but it was possible that the Logos knew exactly how much mankind meant to God. And he said, I'm willing to go out of existence if it'll make God happy. What an example to us. Can we do any less? We're not being asked to go out of existence, brethren. All that we're asked to do is to give up some of the petty, insignificant, immaterial, irrelevant personal preferences that Brother Johnson spoke or read about this morning from the Manet comment. That's all God is asking us to do. And he's promised us a life with him throughout the ages of eternity. So let's learn the lesson that we don't have to insist on our own personal preferences. Let others have their way and do it graciously. Now, a lot more could be said about that, but we're going to go on. The great message of the Bible is love. And I love these little children that came up here and said, what is love? God is love. He loves us. And we should have love for God in return. We should have love for the brethren. We should have love for all mankind. Even for our enemies. Love is the important doctrine of the Bible. And I'm sure we all agree on that. Now, we're going to close with what I have in my own mind found, I think, as the perfect closing to this. You know, every speaker tries to find a perfect closing sentence or two to leave with everybody so that they'll kind of remember that closing sentence. If they don't remember anything else, they'll remember that closing sentence. We try, but we very rarely succeed. But I've got the perfect closing thought. If you want to know more about God's love, and you want to think about it, I want you to try this exercise. Think of what life would be like if God did not have this attribute of love. See these flowers here? Can everybody see these flowers? You know what? That's a part of God's love for all of us. They're beautiful. God's love provided that. He didn't have to provide that to be just or wise or to show his power. He did that because he loved us. There are different colors in it. It gives us an appreciation of what God is like. And I'm told that really, as far as colors are concerned, we can only really appreciate 15% of all the colors that are in the color spectrum, if that's the right term. 15% is all we can appreciate. It's all we can see. I'm looking forward to the kingdom when either mankind or at least the church will be able to see the other 85% of the colors and the beauty that is in the world and in the heavenlies. Think of what it's going to be like if 15% is that beautiful. But if God didn't love us, we wouldn't have it. Think of the variety of music that can soothe the savage beast in us. The song of the birds. Music creates moods for us. And I just love that part of For This Cause when the music builds up and it comes to that half hallelujah chorus. It's just thrilling to our hearts. But there would be no music if God didn't love us. There'd be no singing of the birds. There would be no variety of foods. Now, you knew I was going to get to food. There'd be no variety of foods for us either. And the same person that I so highly respected that gave some of these other opinions said, you know, God could have arranged to give us everything that we need for our nutrients in a potato. Now, I like potatoes. But think of eating a potato the rest of your life, and that's all. Be pretty boring, wouldn't it? And I saw a lot of you enjoying ice cream last night. Sundaes with chocolate on it, strawberries, bananas. You wouldn't have that if God didn't love us. That's what the world would be like. And you can take it from there, okay? Because my time is up. Soon, one of these days, we don't know when, God is going to call us all home. The kingdom surely is near. So then every one of us shall give an account of himself to God. Have we really appreciated God's love?